Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Production, one of the few black-owned radio stations that discuss solutions to the issues concerning the black community. Present Black Urban America. All you people listening from your laptops and computers, if you want to call in, the call-in number is 516-531-9540. That is 516-531-9540. And if you have a comment or a statement or a question, please press 1. Again, press 1. The lineup is on Saturdays at 8 p.m. We have Cough to Sneeze with Provocative Thought. And Tuesday, we have Black Urban America and myself. My name is Kenny Jones. On Wednesday at 8 p.m., we have The Cutting Edge with Meshawn. Now, tonight, I just want to read something before I bring on my guests, and I'm about to tune them in and what have you. But the Second Amendment reads, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. And this was ratified in December of 1791. And I'm going to have people on this evening. They are going to discuss their rally, the Second Amendment walk, unity walk on September 22nd. Now, but before we go into the Second Amendment, I'd just like to discuss on July 1st, 2020, in Tenderloin, Texas, the Killen Police Department, along with U.S. Marshals, 1:29 a.m., serving arrest warrant, shot James Scott Reed, like up to 20 times. Now, talk about overzealous and overzealous. You were serving an arrest warrant and they're going to shoot you. Not one time, but 20 times. And tonight we have his sister, Jamika Reed. Also, we had Travis Johnson. And also, we had Nick Bizarre. Good evening, folks. How y'all doing?
Good evening.
Brother Kenny, thank you. Greetings. Peace and blessings.
Greetings.
Mr. Jones, how you doing?
On the show. I want to first address the shooting I just want to say this. You think with all of these body cams and car cams and telephone cameras, with all of this technology, you think the police will control their behavior and they're zealous for harming black men and women? Ms. Reed, can you go into further about what happened on July 1st?
Well, this happened on February 27, 2019 in Killeen, Texas. My brother was killed during the execution of a no-knock warrant at his place of residence. It was a narcotics no-knock warrant, and they shot up his house more than 20 times, but he was only shot once right under his right armpit. So we have questions. We've been having questions since the beginning of this investigation, and we still do have questions, and we're in the middle of a pending lawsuit. And in the midst of all this going on, you know, they shot through the outside of his house through the walls and windows. So, you know, they claim that he was shooting at them, but they don't have no evidence supporting that. So right now we just asking or requesting the chief of police, Charles Kimball, to reopen the investigation and charge the officers that they connected with my brother's death. So that's what we at right now, trying to push that investigation to be reopened. And then and just to let everyone know, one officer had been arrested for tampering with evidence. So that alone is enough just to reopen the investigation, you know, because it shows that the officer is not truthful or honest, and it's something that they're hiding. So, you know, so that's where we at right now. And then we on the then I'm on trying to get the no-knock warrants banned completely for the state of Texas and for Killeen. And I know a lot of people been behind me with that movement for Killeen. I know Les Moves been working with me on trying to get it banned right now, currently. So right now, that's just all we're waiting on for the chief to come up with some solutions with the community board he created when we get me no-knock warrants banned. So just like he was stating earlier with the Second Amendment rights, and like I said at the city council meeting on the 23rd of June of 2020, that someone's Second Amendment right minds that, you know, should not end over a drug case because the law enforcement wants to close down on a drug case. So my Second Amendment rights should not end for self-defense. You know, I have the right to defend my home and to bear arms to do that. So, you know, all that stuff comes in play whenever you want to break into someone's house unannounced. You know, that's the big thing.
How old was James? How old was he?
He was 40 at the time of his death, going on 41. His birthday was in April, so he died February 27th. So, you know, a little bit before his 41st birthday.
So, were you there when they were trying to arrest your brother?
I wasn't. We had received a phone call from his girlfriend or his soon-to-be fiance. I know he was speaking about asking her to marry him. But she called us that morning, like a few minutes after they had shot him. And she was letting us know that they had killed him. And so we made it there pretty quick to his house. But by then, you know, they had the roads blocked off. So we could only stand at the corner, you know, of his house, you know, down the street. And I could see officers running in and out of there early that morning. Even though in the investigation report, they stated that no one ever entered the home after shot was seized. So, we got the call first thing after they shot him, and so we made it that quick, which, you know, that was a blessing because, you know, it gave us time to see what was going on, and then it gave them less time to cover up their tracks because that's what they really were trying to do. So by the time we made that, it was about 6:20, you know, maybe 6:30 in the morning, a little bit before then, and we tried to find out what's going on. No one ever told us. So by 8:30, around 9 o'clock that morning, the chief Chief Charles Cameron finally agreed to have one of the officers meet us at the police headquarters station to let us know what was going on. So once we got there, Officer Goosby, he informed us that he doesn't know what's going on, and he just know that that my brother was dead. He was shot and he was killed. So he don't know what happened or anything. But trying to find out once we got the investigation report, that particular officer was in the raid. So, you know, I don't know why he told us that. Maybe because he wasn't allowed to speak on it. I'm not sure. But, you know, so by the time we find out that he was shot by the cops, it was later on that evening, late that afternoon, once they confirmed that he was shot by an officer, which is we already concluded that by then because we were putting two to two together while we were standing out there trying to figure out what was going on. But at the end of the day, you know, like the lawsuit, if you get the lawsuit, you get a chance to read it, or the investigation report, you can see the inconsistencies in all the officer's statements. None of them is making any sense. The stories don't line up what they said was happening at first. Like I said, they said my brother shot 2 or 4 times, but he got a loaded clip, you know, so it doesn't make sense. A lot of the stuff doesn't make sense. So, like I said, we're in a pending lawsuit now, but we just, right now, we're really demanding for the chief of police or the mayor, anybody, to reopen this investigation and charge the officers in connection with my brother's death. And get some police accountability held up, you know, something that they're trying to do now, that they claim that they already have what transparency and police accountability, which is something that we have not seen since the beginning.
Let me ask you this. What is a no-knock warrant? What is that?
A no-knock warrant is when the police can serve a warrant without, you know, usually they have a knock-and-announce warrant, a regular search warrant, where they knock and they have to announce themselves within a matter of time, 2 minutes or so, then they can break in. No-knock warrant, they don't knock or announce themselves. They just break in first, and then they announce themselves immediately after the breach. That's how it's supposed to happen. But with my brother's case, this instance here, he, like the witness that stated that was in the house with him, his girlfriend, and then just the witnesses' statements, who all gave statements that stayed in that surrounding area, no one heard them announce themselves. Once they breach the door or the window, they're supposed to announce themselves as a community police department. We have a search warrant. That's after they hit the resident, which they didn't do. So, and then, with the Breonna Taylor, they didn't announce themselves. They just started shooting. They hit some, started shooting. So, yeah, the day that they executed my brother's warrant, that same week, his house was shot at. So, you know, y'all choosing to execute warrants at the wrong time, at the wrong time period, then it's in the middle of the night when people are all automatically going to think someone breaking in, because you got to remember, you're not even announcing yourself when you're breaking in people's homes. And with my brother's case, like I said, they shot through the walls, the back of the walls and windows. So you can't see through a wall, for one, and for two, that's violating protocol. That's not part of the protocol. That's not how a no-knock warrant goes. You know, you got the entry team, you got the side team. Y'all going to have a team by the bedroom window or wherever they known that the suspect to be at the most, wherever the informant gave them information. So most of the no-knock warrants are created based off of informant information. Half of it, majority of the time, it's false information. So anybody taking anything to get out of it. And a lot of times, the officers is exaggerating information. So it's just based off of informant. And so, you know, they always have a team. Supposed to, you know, the breach, once they breach the door or the window, whichever they choose first, it's just an automatic domino effect. You know, that's for the next breach to happen. You know, whether you're on the window or the back door, whatever, you know, team that you have set up, that's just how it's supposed to happen. But with my brother's case, they violated so many protocols and procedures as far as, the officer that was charged with tampering with evidence. He was shooting in the back of his house. And I just want to clarify, you know, when all this first happened, and when you look up information about the case, they keep stating that his side, because I spoke to the former DA before he retired, Paul McWilliams, and I asked him why did he charge them more than just tampering evidence. He didn't want to charge them that, you know, that they have to, the judge had to recommend that. So, you know, if he was shooting the back of the house, he wasn't even supposed to be there. That wasn't his position. That's not where his supervisor told him to go. But he went and walked all the way in the back of the house, started shooting anyway. They said his shots his shots wasn't lethal, but nobody never concluded who shot my brother. Like I said, he was shot one time before officers shot their gun. So, three officers shot their guns. One wasn't for sure if he did or not. But so you don't know who shot him because the bullets he recovered from his body was shattered into pieces. So you couldn't identify where the bullet came from. So you can't exclude Anthony Custis, the one for tampering evidence, out of the equation because his shot then went straight through the bathroom wall. It traveled in a 45-degree angle, which went straight to went through the bathroom wall, traveled towards right, slightly right, and went through the side of his bedroom wall. So So they can't. I don't see how they was able to conclude that Anthony Custis' shots did not kill my brother or did not play any effect into his outcome of this raid, which is we believe he shot first and the officers on the side start shooting. It's a whole lot of information. Like I said, it's a 98-page report from the Texas Rangers, and then we got a 34-page lawsuit. So it's a lot of information you can read through, but once you just read it, you can see the inconsistencies of the whole investigation.
I want to know, were there any children in the home?
No, at that time, by the grace of God, because his girlfriend, she has two children, and they usually stay on the weekend. So this happened early Monday morning, and Sunday night before 10 p.m. or whatever, the kids were there that whole weekend. They just went home for their next school day and stuff. So by the grace of God, they missed them by a few hours, you know.
Now it said that they came at the house at like 1:30 in the morning.
The warrant was executed at 6 a.m., but they started gathering up, you know, about 5:45, 5:30, so.
And how many police agencies were serving this warrant?
There was 12 officers on that warrant. From my understanding, it was between 10 and 12. Maybe one or two more, but it was about 12 officers on this one. And they came, they executed it. According to the investigation report, they drove up there by 6 a.m. and by 6:11, that's when they actually executed the one at 6:11 and at 6:12. And I ain't going to say 6:11 on the dot too when it turned 6:11. It was just 6:11 because at 6:12, that's when they reported shots fired over the TAC radio. And then at 6:12, again, that's when they turned on the body the dash cam, the patrol car dash cam, after the shots was ceased. So all this happened. With that being said, if you look at the timeline, all this happened within a minute.
My brother, he's dead asleep
in the middle of sleep, naked. He don't have time to get up and grab a gun and start shooting.
Wow. So I guess to say that, like you said, there's a lot of discrepancy, and only one officer has been detained.
Right, only one been charged and sentenced to 6 years deferred adjudication probation, which is that's nowhere near clearly enough, and. You know, we believe all four officers involved in the connection of his death should be charged because the officer that was at the window who claimed it was a shootout between him and my brother, he's the one who said that he shot 4 inches from his face 2 or 4 times. But like I said, it was seven rounds. It's an eight-round clip, seven rounds in the clip, and one supposed to be jammed in the chamber, supposedly. So where the bullet at, that you don't even have the bullet that he, that you claim he shot, but how you got from two to four shots to no shots.
What did the autopsy report say? Did you get a copy of the autopsy report? Or the medical examiner's report?
Yes, I did.
We
didn't get a copy of the sketch because from my understanding, it comes to find out they usually don't disclose that part until the court comes, court proceedings comes, then the lawsuit. But we do have a copy of the written out report. And the bullet traveled through his right side. It's right up under his armpit. It traveled through his right lung, through his right chest, side chest cavity, through his right lung, and then went through his left lung and went around towards his back. And it tried to exit out his back in the middle of his back, but it just stopped right there, like a little point. It stopped right there. But he was only shot once. And like I said, it got excessive force because his house had like 20-something bullet holes in it. So if he was having a shootout and they claim he was leaning out of a window, and like I said, he had about 2.5 inches height on the officers on outside of the window. So, you know, due to the height inside the house compared to outside. Because, you know, if I go to his bedroom window, I had to stand on my tippy toe. I'm 5'3". Outside measure is five inches and 65, whatever. But anyway, it's a little bit higher than me, so I have to stand on my tippy toes and look over it. And so that means from the inside of his house, he stands tall because it sits on a higher ground level. So for him to lean out the window, he has to be pointing straight down. And if he is shooting, having a shootout, he would have been shot in his chest or arm, shoulder, face, or something because he's right in front of you. You know what I mean? When they come to one, they got the person with the shield in front and the person right behind them with the gun, and then everybody else lined up around, surrounded. So if y'all right there at the window with him, and it's just an armed confrontation between you and them, you know, you and him, he wouldn't get shot right under his right armpit. His arms had to be up in order to get hit right there. You know what I'm saying? So he has to, you know, it just doesn't make no sense for someone to be leaning, hanging out a window, or even the arms just hanging out. You would have shot him way more than what you would have shot him, you know what I'm saying, than what he would have been shot. That one time when it happened, he would have been ridiculed with bullets. You know, his whole body would have been full with bullets.
So, where does this window lead? Like the bedroom or the kitchen?
His bedroom window, you know, it's right there in front. You know, his foot of his bed. Whenever he get out the foot of the bed at the end of the bed, once he stand up, he's right in front of his window. So you know, when they came and did a raid, he stood up, he jumped out of bed. And first he sat up. He tried to wake, you know, try to figure out what was going on. And he sat up for like a few seconds, and that's when he stood up. And he stood up to make a movement. He took a step like he was leaving out of his room, and that's when he got shot. You know, that's when he got shot. But of course, the Killeen Police Department, they claim he got out of bed and went straight to the window and started shooting. There's no way, you know. And the officers that claim that they breached the door first, which was supposed to give the signal for the window team, which is the side bedroom window, to breach the window. But which doesn't make sense. If he breached the door first and you claim that you heard shots fired as soon as you stepped over the threshold of the front door of the house, that means, you know what I'm saying, you're trying to say he was shooting through a closed window, and that's impossible. You know what I mean? So all of their statements, you got one officer saying he's shooting through a closed window, one officer saying that he shot 2 or 4 times, 4 inches from his face. You got another officer stating that he could see him shooting from the back of the house, so he felt like his other officers, which is this is what's having the evidence, which is I don't see why you have to hide. If you feel like your other officers are in immediate danger and you felt the need to start shooting through the back of the wall from outside the house, you know what I'm saying, you felt the need of that, then why hide your ammunition? Why lie about that stat? You have a legitimate reason to shoot then. You know, you hide your ammunition because you had no legitimate reason to start shooting, and then you would try to cover up the tracks. Like I said, we believe this man, Anthony Ryan Cookson. We believe that he started shooting first from the back of my brother's house by up under his bathroom walls, which is I couldn't figure out why would you shoot through the bathroom walls. He was shooting through the bathroom walls because, like I said, he was shooting from a 45-degree angle to the right, which was traveling through the bedroom walls. And for a bullet to be shattered in someone's body, it had to travel through some hard surfaces to shatter by time and make it to you, through your body. Because if it was a direct shot through the window, it would, I don't think it would go through all that. It's just a lot of stuff
that
makes no sense.
You feel that your brother did not have any warning and the police officers saw him and just start shooting?
We believe since the beginning, we've been saying that y'all went there, the police went there with the intent to kill him. That's all their intentions were. Like they had an execution, a hit list or something, and they went to make sure it was done. To bring up some petty drugs, they found paraphernalia, a gram of leafy substance, some Xanax pills, and a few exos, or what you call them, ecstasy pills. So that's not worth anybody's life. You know, like I said, you could wait till he came out his house to arrest him. You know, with all this stuff going on with the no-knock warrants, that's why I'm so determined and, you know, to put an end to this nationwide, but mainly for Killeen and then mainly for the state of Texas. Because Austin has it bad. You know, Houston had that warrant a month before my brother no-knock warrant happened with the Harden Street warrant and when they killed the two couples. So then you got the Breonna Taylor. They just banned their no-knock warrant, the use of it for Louisville, Kentucky. So I'm hoping for the same here. And then, you know, I'm hoping that one day I can get with Senator Rand Paul, who petitioned for the no-knock warrants to be banned nationwide. So that's really what needs to happen for it to just be banned.
Especially with the climate, with relationship between the African community and the law enforcement. Brother Travis, how you doing this evening, man?
Man, I'm doing good, Brother Kenneth, man. Thank you for having me on. Before you get started saying anything else, I just want to let everybody know that we stand right step with step with Jameika Reed and the James Scott Reed family. You hear the story. You hear what's going on. And we are coming for justice. We want the death penalty. We want punishment. Or we want the maximum amount of time that these race soldiers can do, because this stuff that's been happening is too many stories like this. And when you think about James Scott Reed, you think about Breonna Taylor, you don't have to leave your community for this stuff. And this stuff has to stop. And I just want to say Jameika is my hero, because I don't know how I would feel if that happened to somebody in my family. Not saying and people think when you see this stuff and you hear this stuff happening, that it can't happen to you, but it can. And you have to just keep your head on straight and try to stay prepared, because you never know when a no-knock warrant's gonna come to your house. And you have to just think about all the things that are going on in your environment. Think about, you know, all of the factors that could play into, you know, what happens. It could be a mistake, you know, like with Breonna Taylor. She wasn't even supposed to have a no-knock warrant on her home. But then, you know, you're finding out this information that it had something to do with they were trying to gentrify her area. And because she didn't want to be out of her home, based upon some sources that the white media is saying, that the gentrification, they wanted to use her home for gentrification. And because she wasn't willing to get out of there, then they came at her and executed her that way. So I just want to say, going back to saying, I just want to say, you know, rest in power to James Scott Reed. We're going to get justice for him down here in Texas, and I'm going to do everything in my power. I don't care what it takes, because this is what we got to do in Black America. We got to take action. The talking is fine, but we got to use the pen and we got to use the pistol to get our job done, because we don't have anybody tank to protect us.
Get over here.
That must be Brother Nick. Chime in anytime, Brother Nick, and welcome to Black Urban America.
Hey, Brother Kenny, I appreciate you having me on. I just kind of want to touch on a couple of things that has been said when it comes to these no-knock warrants, and specifically here in Texas. I want to share something with all the listeners out there. In 2013, there was a gentleman by the name of Henry McGee. He was served a no-knock warrant at his home, right, in 2013. And he defended himself. It was a no-knock warrant. He didn't know who was coming into his home. He shot and killed a police officer during the execution of a raid, a no-knock warrant, in his home. And then they decided, the grand jury decided not to charge him with capital murder on the police officer because, again, we're in Texas where you have a castle doctrine and a castle law, which means you have a right to stand your ground and defend your home from anybody you believe to be an intruder or causing harm to you or your family. Now, that was in 2013. Yeah. And then in 2014, they decided not to go ahead and prosecute him for capital murder. Now, let's go another year, 2014, in the Killeen area. Okay. There was a brother by the name of Marvin Guy. Same thing, right there in the Killeen area, Bell County. He was a brother. He felt somebody was entering his home. They served a no-knock warrant. They came through his window. He was in the bed with his wife. He struck and killed a police officer, killed him. This was in 2014. Brother Marvin Guy is still locked up there in Killeen, well, outside there in Bell County. He's facing one charge of capital murder, three charges of attempted capital murder. This was in 2014. He still hasn't went to trial, and they decided to go ahead with these capital murder charges against the police officer. Now, the only difference in these two cases that I'm letting you know is the guy who they let off that the grand jury decided not to indict, he was white. The guy that's still in jail for 6 years, treating him like he's some terrorist that they're keeping in Guantanamo Bay, he's black. Now, these warrants were executed similar to Brother Reed, right, because informants tell him stuff. The police decide to get these no-knock warrants and raid these homes. Well, this white guy, they did find material in his home, believed that he was selling narcotics. But when they went to Brother Guy, when they looked for him, the only thing they found in his home was a pipe, which shows that maybe he was smoking or a drug user smoking weed. So they didn't find anything in his home to say that he was in there selling narcotics. He may have been using narcotics in a small amount because they found nothing in there. But when you look at the cases, they're identical. There were no knock warrants served. Both people believed their families were in danger. They defended themselves. The grand jury decided not to indict the white person, but decided to keep this black person locked up, and he still hasn't went to trial. Only difference was the skin tone here. That was the only difference.
Another case at black man from the criminal justice system. Now, let me get this straight. McGee is the white guy, right? And Guy is the brother, right? And McGee shot a police officer as well as Guy did because they both were standing their ground and protecting their homes. And that's which come under the Second Amendment that you have the right to bear arms. Now, McGee was let go. And Guy is still in prison and not went to trial yet. For 6 years.
He's been sitting in Bell County, which is near Killeen, which is the county that Killeen sits in, where this travesty happened to Brother Reed as well. Same county. He's sitting there. He's been sitting there for 6 years, and they keep deferring his trial date. I think as of right now, there are about 30,000 signatures on a petition to get these charges dropped against Brother Marvin Guy. Now, this other gentleman, McGee, the white gentleman, he's still going through his court case because they did find drugs, and they do have him with the intent to distribute. So, but they dropped the murder charges against a police officer based on the Second Amendment, which falls in line with the castle doctrine, which means that your castle, right, your home, you have the right to defend your home. So all these brothers, when you get served a no-knock warrant, just like in the case of Breonna Taylor, when there's a no-knock warrant served and you're under the belief that you're under distress and someone is breaking into your home, then you have every right to defend your home, yourself, and whoever else is in there. And that's what the commonality with all these cases is, that these individuals believe that they were under duress, so they were defending themselves.
So why do you think, I already said, but why do you think that the black guy, the defendant, is still in jail while the white guy is out of jail? Maybe because they could bail or something. What was the brother given bail, or did he didn't get arraigned yet?
They said his bail. I believe. Let me get the numbers for you to make sure it's accurate. I believe his bail is set at, I believe it's $5 million.
Oh my goodness.
So
in both cases, police officers were shot, right?
Police officers were killed, yes.
In both cases. And one is walking the street and the other is still in jail. Okay.
Correct.
All right.
So, I mean, you ask me why do I think that is? I think the answer is obvious, because these situations, these two in particular that I'm talking about, are parallel to each other. I mean, they're identical. The only difference between these two cases in the grand scheme is that one had drugs with the intent to distribute. The other one had a pipe, but they found no drugs in the home, right? But when you look at just the execution of the Rays themselves, they were identical. Both were with their spouses. Both were under duress. Both believed that their homes were being invaded, and they both defended themselves. The only difference here is one was white, and that's the one that got out, and one is black, and that's the one that's been sitting there for 6 years. And they happened within, I believe, 6 or 7. These two incidents happened within 7 months of each other in the state of Texas. So this is an apples-to-apples comparison, right? It's not apples to oranges. It's apples to apples, and they were within the same time frame.
What do you think would have happened if neither one had a weapon?
Well, you know, if neither one of them had a weapon, you know, they very well, both of them could be dead. I mean, actually, but it would be my belief that Brother Marvin Guy would be dead today if he didn't have a firearm, right? And that's when we start talking about the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms.
Right.
You have every right under the Constitution to defend yourself and to defend your loved ones. So if Brother Marvin Guy didn't have this weapon, he wouldn't have been able to defend himself. And we already know how this normally turns out. We thought, right? They never have positive identification. They just go off of belief. Some type of magic tells them that this black man is big, scary, and he has a gun, so we have to kill him. You know what I mean? And that's what it comes down to. But that weapon is meant to defend yourself and allow you to break contact with whoever's trying to do you harm. So Brother Marvin Guy exercised his Second Amendment right to allow them police officers. He broke contact. He shot them. They had to back off, and they had to reassess the situation to get him. And so by him having a firearm and exercising his Second Amendment right, which is his right to do so, he saved his life that particular day.
Wow. And all three incidents was no knock warrants, which it basically said they can enter your home, do whatever, and take you off the jail without even knowing if they had the right suspect.
Exactly. Exactly. And we see in the case of Breonna Taylor that they were looking for an ex-boyfriend, right? And so they executed two search warrants that day, one for Breonna Taylor's home and one for the ex-boyfriend's home. But my thing has always been, what is the purpose? Because they saw him or her exchange a package. For all we know, that could have been his clothes or, you know, something that belonged to him when they were together, and she was giving it to him. Like, there was nothing there that says that Breonna Taylor was distributing drugs from her location. But yet, they still went to execute this search warrant based on a false premise, which, you know, we know what happened there, which resulted in the loss of that beautiful sister's life.
Right. Maybe, Brother Travis, now, explain to me, what is the Black Dollar University? What is that?
Well, Black Dollars University was something that I came up with because I wanted to educate people in my community and educate people around Black America about issues that are going on and how to utilize our power and form under Negro unity. Because as we know, the FBI Hoover said, he said that, you know what I'm saying, the biggest threat to the United States is Negro unity. So I believed in that. And that's something that we're starting to see now. And I utilize my platform to bring on people that doesn't really have major platforms like a lot of people out there. And I want them to be able to utilize their voice and express how they feel. Like my brother Nick that's on here, No Gun. He has a wonderful show. And he has a channel as well, and he's talking about gun safety. But a lot of people don't know about his channel, and more people may know a little bit more about mine. So I bring him on and bridge that gap where we're all utilizing our resources to help each other and push the message. And that's what Black Dollars University is all about. It's the Negro Unity channel, and it's all about promoting Black power. It's strictly about Black power, raw and uncut. That's how we do it.
Now, you and Brother Nick is organizing a Second Amendment unity war in Texas. Why do you feel that we need a rally surrounding the Second Amendment, which is the right to bear arms and protect your property and your family?
Well, the reason I think of that, Brother Jones, is because if you look around our communities, every time you turn around, the police are in the communities, in our Black communities, not people of color, not minorities. We're talking about specifically descendants of American slaves, Foundation of Black Americans, American descendants of slavery we're talking about that are from this country. And when these police come into our communities, the first thing that they want to do is bring out their guns. They want to bring out the ATF. They want to bring out the SWAT. And then they want to start slapping people around. They want to start shooting people. They want to start running over people and feel like that they can do whatever they want. And we've never really had no protection or service. So our Second Amendment gives us the right to protect ourselves and serve our community. And that's why we believe so hard in the Second Amendment, that we can protect our own community and we can serve our own community at the same time without the police, because the police isn't doing anything. As we see what's happening across the country, you see every day on social media, or you're hearing about it from somebody that people like Elijah McClain then got killed, or you hearing stuff about Brother William McAtee up in Louisville, Kentucky, who was serving the police free food and get killed. So this is an everyday occurrence. Even after George Floyd arrested Powell, George Floyd got killed, we still seeing this stuff going on. And these police don't care about, these great soldiers don't care about our lives. So we have to take our lives into our own hands, like Brother Nick said, and we have to protect our Black men, Black women, and Black children. Because if we don't, then they're going to fall victim. And then this is going to be a continuous process. So in order for us to do what we need to do, we need to come together, we need to take action, and we need to stand up for James Scott Reed family, for the Javier Ambler family, for Marvin Guy, for Breonna Taylor, and so many others. So this is our call to action, and this is how we're going to do it. And if the police doesn't want to comply and put in the right laws that need to go in as far as this police reform goes, then this is what they're going to get every single day, because this is the new norm. It's not normal to walk without without your Second Amendments anymore, because if you don't have them, it could be your life. And I'd rather have it on me than not have it at all and be able to protect my family and my community.
Now, many black politicians around this country, mayors, state senators, state legislators, U.S. senators, a lot of black politicians around the country saying that guns is a serious problem in black communities. What would your response be? Anyone?
Brother Jones, let me take that. For 400 years, gun ownership among black people have been taboo. You got to remember, we just recently have been able to own firearms. Remember, when we were enslaved, hey, the last thing we could have was a firearm, because they feared what would happen if enslaved people had firearms. It was their way out, and they prevented us from having that. So what you see a lot of times with these black lawmakers, what you see is a plantational mentality that we have to break them from, okay? Because nobody talks about when whites own guns. You know, it's like Brother Travis just said, for us it's a new norm. For them, it's always been normal for them to exercise their Second Amendment right. So what we're trying to do here with this Second Amendment Unity Walk is to make it more public, make it more optical to say, yes, blacks own firearms. Blacks are responsible firearm owners. We will exercise our Second Amendment right, and that's the purpose behind it. That, and then let them know, hey, we need legislation passed. A lot of these laws that you have in place negatively impact us. And so we need to let these lawmakers, and particularly these black lawmakers, because I'm glad you said that, we need to hold them accountable. Our vote can't be for free anymore. So for us to vote for these black lawmakers, in turn, they have to hear what we propose to them, and they have to take action and put those, our things in the law to make sure that our communities are being served correctly. But, you know, a lot of times you will see people trying to infringe on our First Amendment right, which is the pen. And so to make sure that we get our First Amendment right across, we will use our Second Amendment right to make sure our First Amendment isn't infringed on. And again, that's the purpose behind the Second Amendment Unity Walk. You know, it's for Javier Ambler. You know, it's for James Scott Reed. It's for Marvin Gaye. It's we need legislation and laws passed specifically for the black community. That's what we need, and we are going to make sure that our voices get heard. Look no further than those brothers over there in Louisiana a few days ago. Those beautiful black sisters went out there to exercise their First Amendment right, and they tried to silence them. So the next day, those brothers came out and exercised their Second Amendment right, so those sisters could exercise their First Amendment right. And people have to understand the correlation between the First and the Second Amendment. You use the Second Amendment when people try to stifle your First Amendment right.
And the First Amendment is freedom of speech, right?
Correct.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure, because I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a Constitution scholar. So,
Brother Kenny, that's fine. And don't forget peacefully assemble. Don't forget
right.
That one, too. Because you can peacefully assemble.
Well,
guess
what? A newsflash. Those rights has been violated. If you have a right to peacefully assemble, guess what? In the last couple of months, since Brother Floyd, rest in peace, people have been pushed around by police officers and the military. And the military have been out there too. From D.C. to Atlanta to New York, they're trying to run over the protesters with police cars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I guess that constitutional right has been violated also openly in the news, in the cameras. So what do you say to that?
Well, I say, you know what, if we not allowed to peacefully assemble, then, as my brother Nick Bezel said, we got to use our Second Amendment rights. And that's when that comes in. We can't peacefully assemble, then we got to go to the Second Amendment and protect ourselves and protect the people that want in our community that want to peacefully assemble. And that's what it's there for. And that's what we stand on.
Now, let me ask you this. Anybody could tackle this question. I could hear Mayor Bottoms. I could hear Senator Booker. I could hear several black politicians said, if you come to a peaceful assembly with firearms, it only going to irritate law enforcement or agitate law enforcement to use their firearms, and there you have a riot. So what do you say that to that scenario? That bring your firearm to a peaceful assembly will agitate law enforcement to use their weaponry. And they got a lot of weapons.
But see, but therein lies the problem, Mr. Jones. See, it's only an issue when the blacks have a gun. See, nobody makes an issue about it. Let's remember, when they stormed the Capitol in Michigan, they didn't do anything. They weren't really talking about those individuals with their guns. They were talking about they weren't wearing masks. That was the conversation. That was the narrative.
Right.
Oh, look at that.
Right. I remember. They were supposedly be Klansmen.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of those alt-right groups, and they stormed the state capitol.
That's just a nice little label for Klansmen. They don't like to be called Klansmen anymore because it's too racist and put them in the bad eye, even amongst their brothers. Even though we have judges, police officers, doctors, teachers that are sympathizers with the Klan. They just don't wear their robes anymore. Only on special occasions.
So for all those black politicians who have an issue with us exercising our Second Amendment right, then they have an issue with blacks exercising their right at all. Because you can't tell us which rights to exercise and which rights not to exercise. We're protected under the Constitution, and we have the right for everything that's in the Constitution, the amendments, everything. It applies to blacks just like it applies to whites. So if you have an issue with us peacefully assembling, exercising our First Amendment right and our Second Amendment right, if you have an issue with that, then you have an issue with our rights, period, which tells me you must be okay with slavery if you don't want us to exercise our rights.
Let me ask you another question. Now, I want you to think about this. Do you think, and I want everyone to give their own perspective on this question that I'm about to ask. Do you think that the strategy of peaceful protest is obsolete, or do you feel there's a need for some type of strategy to address our issues?
Well, I can answer that for you very, very quickly right here, brother Jones. The key to all of this outside of the protest, because we can only protest so long before we get tired of yelling, screaming, Black Lives Matter. We saying they saying you know this and they saying that out there while they saying Black Lives Matter. You got all kinds of signs. I've been on Ground Zero, and being out there, I tell all these white folks out here that if you're gonna be out here talking about Black Lives Matter, make sure you have that same energy when we talking about reparations, when we talking about getting restitution, recompense, and repair for our people that have been economically deprived since we've been here, you know. And then the main thing that we need to have, besides all this protesting, once all the smoke clears with all this protesting, we still got to stay focused on our common interest. And our common interest is a black agenda. If they don't have any tangibles, we not voting. They got to bring the black agenda to the table for all descendants of American slaves, period. If they don't have that, then there's no need for us to do any more talking. We need to hold our votes and focus on black empowerment, because we have to share our resources with each other. And we know we don't have any allies. They saying that this is black and brown coalition. Oh, the Asians with us. Oh, we got the Indians with us. Joe Biden, Jim Crow Joe Biden, is the same one that said he wants Native Americans to be included with our reparations. And they already got their reparations. They got casinos. Yeah, they got all of this stuff. And we have nothing. So our demand is black agenda.
Right. But you didn't answer my question, though. Now you sound like a politician now. My question was, as we do all of that, what you just said, nothing comes, no solution, no outcomes. What's the next step? Do you feel that the black community should involve themselves in armed struggle?
Let me make sure I understand you correctly. Are you asking that if everything that we're doing falls on deaf ears, should we revolt?
It's been doing for the past 150 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Let me say this. I guess Brother Travis is getting ready to say the same thing. At what point is enough enough? Okay, like, at what point do you realize no matter what you do actionably that you don't receive the compensation, not that you want, but that you deserve after 400 plus years? Like, what options do you have left? What do you do? Let me give you a scenario, and that will probably answer your question without me saying it directly. Politicians are there basically as negotiators, whether it's, you know, here in the United States or diplomats overseas.
Right.
We have a standing military for a reason, right? So when diplomacy fails, what do? We send the military in. When diplomacy mm-hmm. no longer is an option, we send in the military to hammer our point home, to hammer our point across. And once we've made our point, we pull the military out, and then we go back, and then we sit down at the negotiation table, and then we work out a deal, and it's over. So, I mean, that's how our country works. That's how our country operates. Our country, everything that we have in America came from violence, everything from the beginning, from its inception. Everything came from violence, whether it was coming over here, taking land from the natives, and also remember – the quote unquote founding fathers, they didn't like what was going on under British rule. And what did they do? They exercised their Second Amendment rights. Am I right or wrong?
Right.
Okay. So remember, our country, everything that's happened in our country, we got to where we were because of violence, everything. So when, like Brother Malcolm said, the chickens eventually have to come home to roost.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I just hope that personally, I hope it doesn't get to that point, because we already had that kind of action back in the mid to late 60s. I was a little boy then, and it's not a nice atmosphere to live under. Where you just came and go to the corner store and without police just throwing you to the ground. Because now they feel, I mean, cities were under siege. Harlem, yeah. Cleveland, L.A., Detroit, you know, cities was under siege. Newark, New Jersey, like the worst. I mean, it was so bad, they had to send the National Guards. And I literally saw a tank coming down my block. And I said, Mommy, what's that? He said, don't worry about it. You know, just go to your room. You know, I mean, it was that serious. And I hope and I pray that we never, they say history repeats itself. And I hope and pray that this will never happen again. But like Dr. Clark said, Dr. John Henry Clark said this in the interview with Wesley Snipes. He said that we as the people have to explore all avenues. Mm-hmm. See, we fell into the hype of integration, and integration did not satisfy our goals and objectives. You know, and that's why Malcolm wanted to take the United States to the UN and charge them with human rights violation. But he said, how can you go to the court, the same court system that is locking you up, beating you over the head, and asking them for your freedom? They're not going to give it to you, because those same people want to see you back on the plantations. So what do you do? And if you look at all history, this is Malcolm, you look at all history of the world, European, China, Australia, India, they all have their revolutions. You do not have a revolution without war. And you never get freedom without some type of struggle. Nobody just not going to give you freedom. I mean, I applaud the NAACP for having these lawyers, these professional lawyers, going into the court system and fighting for our freedom. But using that system, using that strategy, you're only going to receive crumbs. You're only going to receive crumbs. And the only way you could separate, and I'm sorry to keep on going on, but the only way you can get your freedom is by taking your freedom. And sometimes, and if you look at other people's histories, and you just mentioned the American Revolution, they wanted their freedom from Europe's tyranny. What did they do? Armed struggle. I just hope that United States American system have common sense of learning from the history, that we don't need that type of struggle. And like you said, we got to have a black agenda. We have to have people that are going to represent us, not the status quo, not the using cold words. You know, we're not minorities. We are the majorities on this planet. You know, because once you use minority, everybody's included. No, we want, there are issues. But we got a different culture from the Chinese. We got a different culture from the India. We got a different culture from the Native Americans. We even got different issues from Latinos. Our issues are different. And so we need our issues to be addressed. And so far, since I've been voting, there has never, ever, there's never been a candidate or a politician that directly respond to our issues.
Absolutely. Man, I agree with that, Brother Jones. I feel that voting, when I've been at these protests, we've heard me and Jamaica, even being at protest with Ms. Jamaica Reed, we've heard some of these politicians come out, and Jamaica hasn't been worried about no voting. She's worried about her brother, I'm right with her. But these politicians have came out in these protests and took advantage of the pain that we've been experiencing for so long, and they utilize this time, instead of talking about the things that have an impact on improving our community, they have preached about Well, I'm voting. Vote for me because I'm running in this election, and I'm going to be here to help you and make sure. And they bring all the butter biscuits out. They bring all these police officers out that look like us and tell us, hey, we working with these guys. We're going to make sure you all right. But they always telling us, you need to get out and vote. Are you registered to vote? And we talking like, hey, we did all of this stuff. We getting justice without even going to a poll, even going to a ballot. You know, with what's going on with George Floyd and that mayor up there, they had asked that mayor. They said, are you going to defund the police? We want to know. This is what Black America wants. This is what the city of Minneapolis wants. And shout out to all of them. And they told him, well, if you're not going to listen to our issues, and you're not going to do what we're telling you to do. We're not asking. We're telling you. We're demanding that you do this. And he said, no, he's not going to do it. They told him to leave. And that's the same way all of us need to be on one accord when this time comes. Is if they don't have what we're demanding from them, ban on no-knock warrants. We want the racial profiling to stop. We want to make sure that we have things in place for our small business owners. That we have talking to business owners out in Austin, Texas, at the Big Easy, place that I went, you know, because it's close to home for me, New Orleans. And my brother Donna told me, he said, man, I tried to get a loan to expand my franchise under Chase Bank. And you know what they told me? They told me, after being with them for 14 years, they told me they was not going to give me anything. So I had to get away from them. And I had to go to a nonprofit organization just so that I could get funds to keep my business going. And this is around the country. And I feel like if they are not going to these politicians, I don't care if they're Black, white, Hispanic, Latino, whatever. If you come to the Black community and you're coming into Black America, you stepping in this field, you better have a Black agenda in your back pocket. You better have somebody that knows what the Black agenda is and what it means to us. And if you don't, we're not voting for you because voting is not going to end racism. It didn't end it then, and it's not going to end it now. Because if you look at the Hart-Celler Act that went on with the Civil Rights Movement, all of these people, all of these immigrants that are here now have leached off of that. And Dr. King did not have someone to pass the legacy down to in order to get on the economic battlefield and fight. And that's what Nick's doing today. That's what Jamaica's doing. That's what I'm doing. And that's what you're doing, Brother Jones. We're all in this together. We're pulling our way together in different areas that we have all been struggling in. And we're pulling it together. We're pulling our resources together, and we're standing together. And if white America doesn't want to atone for what they've done to us, then we will have to take means into our own hands by any means necessary and every means necessary. And that's how I feel about what needs to go on right now. Other than that, we don't have nothing to talk about. And that's where the pen comes in, because the pistol can only do so much. Yeah, the pistol can stop violence from happening, protect your community. But after that, then what? After you get protection for your community, you got to have somebody to put in your community to be able to put legislation together to take it to white America so that they know what's going on, and we fight for that. And we stand behind that. And that comes back to the First Amendment, peacefully assembling for our legislation. And if they don't want to work with our legislation, then we're going to back it up with the Second Amendment. And that's how it has to go. Because we don't have any other options. We're running out of options. We're tired of talking to white America. And we don't have to explain ourselves to white America about what slavery is, what it did, because they have all the resources. Hell, they took it from us. They took our land. They took everything from us. So why do we have to sit up and explain to y'all something that y'all took from us based on history? Y'all know the history is there. Just read it for yourself. We don't have to explain it to you no more. If you don't see all this pain that we're going through, you should know by now why we're out here protesting, why we're out here marching, why we're out here with our Second Amendment rights, with our weapons out. If they don't understand that, then they need to go. They need to relearn some education on Black history, because it's real, and we're here for it.
What do you guys think that? Do you guys think that this protesting Do you think this all this protesting are going to? Because I've seen it before. We'll protest for a while, then die down, everything go back to normal. You know, that has been the status quo since. That's why I had stopped marching. You know, I say, well, nothing's going to come of it. No laws is going to change. They're just going to wait it out and just things just go back to normal. Do you think that that's going to happen this time? Or do you think something will happen with all this protest? Or do we need to come up with another strategy? Because there's more than one strategy to utilize here. And I'm not talking about armed struggle. I'm talking about financial boycott, which it has been very effective in the past. But we don't use that strategy because we become uncomfortable ourselves. So do you think all this protest is going to, has it change going to take place from all this protest that's going around the world?
Well, I think, first off, I think since the beginning, since Brother George Floyd was murdered, what I have noticed is the black dollars are being put back into the black community more. I'm seeing more of that, right? I see more people buying black, making a conscious effort to buy black, to go to black restaurants, to purchase. You know, a lot of times, even though, you know, we're the middleman between wholesalers and then, you know, retailing it, but I am starting to notice that more people are becoming more conscious of purchasing black, which is a step in the right direction, which is a way to help our people, which is a way to empower our community. And based off what you were just saying, I'm thinking about the bus boycotts and, you know, how, you know, during that time, people were getting vans and buses for blacks, and they were basically getting ready to bankrupt a lot of the white bus companies. I think the strategy can be effective in certain situations, but we have to be able to own more to be able to apply that pressure. You know, because I know growing up, I remember, you know, having black-owned grocery stores, you know, convenience stores, black-owned gas stations, right? A lot of the stuff where I grew up at was black-owned. But, you know, as I got older, you start seeing the transition, right? Like there were more, you know, Indians or North Africans or Middle Easterns purchasing.
Well, integration did properties. That. Integration.
Right, you're absolutely right.
Let me ask y'all this, because we get ready to run out of time now. We only got about 15 minutes left. Do you think, think about what I'm about to ask now. You know, I won't get anybody in trouble. I know, like, y'all being watched. Do you think that integration, do you think that we should continue integration or start seriously examining what Marcus Garvey and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad have been discussing this for the past 90 to 100 something years, having your own, doing for self as separation?
I think separation is the best. I think at this point in time, the way everybody has turned their backs on us, which they've done it for a long time. It's not just in 2020. They've been turning their backs on us. If you look at, you know, the policies that Barack Obama put in place, you know, everything was put in place. Everybody was like, well, you know, after he get in his 4 years and he does everything the next 4 years, we're going to be okay. He's going to turn it around for us. And that turnaround never came. And we look at now, more white people are wealthier than ever. Jeff Bezos, you look at any of Warren Buffett, all of them, they're wealthy as ever. And what we receive in return for all the work that we put in to build this country, we've received nothing. And white America has shown us that, you know, they rather have 24-karat gold dipped chicken wings than to make sure that we have a piece of that 24-karat gold that they putting on the chicken wings. you know, so that we can be able to take care of our businesses and keep our economy going, building our economy up. But they're so focused on themselves that they can't get out of their own way. And we keep integrating with them, trying to make things work, and it's not working. We see it happening every day. We're being harassed on our jobs. We're being harassed in the streets. You see these Karen, Susans, and Beckys out here calling 911 calls on us, and we're not doing anything but walking down the street or in a grocery store, somewhere like that. So why continue to integrate with these people, these evil people that don't want us around? And then they call us the N-word, and we're supposed to be fine with that. I'm not cool with seeing that happening to our people. And I think that the best way for us to move forward and really focus on ourselves is to separate from white America, because that's the only way we're going to be able to focus on ourselves and focus on what's important to us here in Black America as descendants of American slaves. That's my take on it.
Yeah, no, I agree a lot with what Brother Travis is saying. I just think integration was a failed experiment. You know, all these promises were made, and they integrated, you know, or tried to integrate things, but you see what ended up happening. You have, you know, situations like white flight where as cities became integrated, the whites left and went to the suburbs, right? And then they took all the money, they took all the wealth with them and went to the suburbs. And then what happened to the inner city? They didn't fund them. You know, they started getting run down. And then so now they're coming back to the inner cities, pushing the blacks out. And, you know, you have gentrification when instead of having revitalization, improving the status of the inner city, urban America, they're pushing them out, and then they're retaking the inner city property and raising the value back up when those neighborhoods have been redlined for years and been locked out to wealth. So I just believe that integration was a failed experiment. You can look around all over America and see how it's failed. But remember, when we had our own, right, you look at all the black cities across America, you know, back in the early part, 1910s, 1920s, you know, we had all this wealth that we were accumulating ourselves, but anytime we had something for ourselves, the whites would come through and burn and bomb it to the ground and wipe out our wealth completely. So I just think that, you know, it was an experiment. It tried, it failed. So, you know, like a lot of other people believe, we need reparations and we need our own piece of the pie. We need a part. You know, the country that's ours, you know, if you give us 2, 3, or 4 states and give us our reparations and let us have a, you know, have our own, you know,
yeah,
ourselves, you know, three states.
Hey, Nick, they can just give us Texas. We'll be good. It's enough land for all the descendants of American slaves in Texas. Just give us Texas.
Exactly.
We good.
Exactly. Because Texas has the resources and has the infrastructure. So.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
The Carolinas, Georgia, you know, yeah, states like that were mostly populated already with black businesses. Miss Reed, we only got a couple
entire
minutes.
Southeast of the United States. Yeah.
Miss Reed, do you have a final?
I'm sorry, I said it.
That's it. Well, gentlemen,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
And I just want everyone to know that I do have a petition online. It's about 16,600 some odd signatures on change.org/justiceforScotty, and 4 is the number 4. So if they want to just go online and sign that petition, and you'll see all the updates about the case also.
Yeah, support that.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for coming on the show tonight. As a matter of fact, before the Unity Walk on September 26th. Yeah, September 26th.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to bring y'all back one more time in August before the event, if that's okay.
Okay. Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. And everybody's welcome to come. You know, you just have to make sure. When I say everybody, I mean specifically, you know, the black community, because there will be no minorities of people of color in our formation. and it's going to be a powerful, powerful event, and I'm looking forward to it, and the ancestors are with us, and it starts at 12 noon at the GWC Carver Museum, the GWC Museum, and it's we're going to walk from there, and we're going to walk to the monument on the state capitol, and we're going to make our voices heard, and we're going to make sure these black legislators know what time it is with what we're doing. We standing up, y'all. So y'all get out there with us and be ready to roll.
And with that, this is Black Urban America with Nick, Travis, and Ms. Reed. And I thank them for coming on the show this evening. They will be back next month. I don't know which day, but they will be back next month to continue this talk. Gentlemen, thank you for coming on and have a good night. And to my audience, I was able to call this evening, but I guess nobody wanted to call. And in fact, I just say the number so many times. But as always, tune in tomorrow night for Cutting Edge with Michonne and Saturday night, Provocative Thought with Carter Sneed. I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.